from the high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, as the time zone may dictate. All of them covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. It's weekend, and I'm honored to be with you a Saturday night going into Sunday morning, and of course tomorrow night as well. I have some shocking and tragic news for you at the top of the program, and I'm sure Richard's going to have a lot to say about this and probably fill me in on details I don't yet have. But what it boils down to is Dr. Eugene Malov is dead. And it is indeed with great sadness that we report the passing of Eugene Malov, who was killed on May 14th, apparently due to some sort of, we don't know about this, allegedly, some are saying some kind of property dispute. It is considered by the police to be a homicide, and an investigation is underway now. Gene is survived by his wife Joanne, son Ethan, and daughter Kim. No funeral arrangements are known at this time. Gene Malov, who in 1991 wrote the book Fire from Ice, now maybe you know him, if you didn't. Searching for the truth behind the cold fusion furor, was the first to courageously and boldly express the truth behind cold fusion long before any science journalist ever dared to. He maintained the cold fusion torch at great personal sacrifice, which initially drew many to learn the truth behind cold fusion. Gene's generosity and commitment to a better world will be forever appreciated. That was written by Stephen B. Krivit. There were, 100 emails in my inbox about the apparent bludgeoning death of Dr. Malov, and I just don't know what to say about this, except the number of scientists and research biologists and astronomers who have met their death prematurely in so many cases is beginning to add up to a fairly large number. Briefly in the world, the U.S. military said Saturday it killed 18 gunmen believed loyal to radical cleric al-Sadr in Baghdad, and jet fighters bombarded militia positions on the capital's outskirts. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld authorized the expansion of a secret program that encouraged physical coercion and sexual humiliation of Iraqi prisoners to obtain intelligence about the growing insurgency in Iraq. The New Yorker is reporting this. That would be certainly a bombshell if true. The Defense Department strongly denied the claims made in that report, which cited unnamed current and former intelligence officials and was published on the magazine's website. Pentagon spokesperson Lawrence DeRita issued a statement calling the claims outlandish, conspiratorial, and filled with error and anonymous conjecture. Meanwhile, the president's approval ratings have hit the lowest levels of his tenure. Presently, 42% overall job approval at 42%. That's a Newsweek poll. So that's the world news. Of course, the real shocking news about Eugene Malov, we're about to, I'm sure, hear more from Richard C. Hoagland. We're also going to be joined shortly by David Wilcock, assuming he can find, perhaps at the bottom of the hour, and he's on a mad dash trying to find a telephone. But Richard C. Hoagland, you all know, a former space science museum curator, a former NASA consultant, and during the historic Apollo missions to the moon, was science advisor to Walter Cronkite. And, of course, CBS News. For the last 19 years, Hoagland has been leading an outside scientific team in a critically acclaimed independent analysis of possible intelligently designed artifacts on Mars. In the past 4 years, he and his team's investigators have been quietly extended, or the investigation itself, to include over 30 years of previously hidden data from NASA, Soviet, and Pentagon missions to the moon. As I mentioned, as soon as we're able, perhaps shortly, we'll have a conversation simultaneously with David Wilcock. All of that coming right up. Good evening. I think we're going to look out and get David on the line right away. I'll tell you about that in a moment. There is one other thing that I'd like to mention. As you know, the movie coming up, the big blockbuster movie, The Day After Tomorrow, is causing a firestorm. I mean, a literal firestorm of publicity, which I guess in a way is probably good for a movie. From the moment when NASA said that they weren't allowed their scientists going to we weren't going to let them comment on the whole thing, to the next moment when all of a sudden they decided they would, to stories from Britain, the highest officials in the government in Britain saying that it's realistic, to others saying it's not, to this simple email I got that I think says, well, says it all, just about. I read your book, Art, and loved it. He refers there to the coming global superstorm, which, of course, you know, in part was the basis for the Day After Tomorrow movie that's about to break over our heads in more ways than one. Anyways, Art, I read your book, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie. However, both the left and right wings of this country are misrepresenting your book. Unless I misread the book, it was not an indictment of global warming. It was, however, a description of a natural geological process which may or may not have been pushed along by pollution. Thank you. In your book to me, you pointed out that this geological process happens about every 12 million years, and you tie it to the zodiac as a possible device the ancients used to warn the future people of Earth. Or did I miss the point? No, my friend. That's from Atocha. Atocha, is it? A-T-O-C-H-A. You didn't miss the point at all. You have the point dead on, my friend. And I've been trying to make it and make it and remake it. And the left, of course, is using this as a sort of, this is going to be your tomorrow, and you better get on the Bush administration and, you know, knock some sense into them. The right, of course, dismisses the whole thing as ridiculous and impossible, bearing in mind this is a science fiction movie. It's not a documentary. It's a science fiction movie based, though, I'm afraid, on what may be a rather accurate forecast of what is going to come, because it has been here before. We have archaeological evidence that mostly we try and bury and not think about with respect to this, but this this emailer had it right on the head. I mean, both sides have this totally wrong. And in the end, it doesn't matter whether it's a natural occurrence, done by the hand of man, or the hand of man just helping it along, or any of the above, and we should all be past that. And if you look at what happened to Europe this last year and all the dead there, it's only the beginning. Our weather is changing, and it's going to change, and we think rather radically. So I think we should be looking at alternative energy sources. And we haven't. We had a little tip of the hat during the Carter administration for that, remember? And nothing since by any administration. So we ought to be looking at ways that we could prolong our energy independence. And after all, we're over there, many believe, fighting a war for exactly all of that right now. And so it's fitting, in a way, I guess, that tonight we will discuss the murder of somebody who is at the forefront of energy research and ultimate independence for the United States. I'm so sorry to have to have been the voice probably to bring you that news. Dr. Eugene Melov murdered. And here with what may be more details would be Richard C. Hoagland. Hey, buddy.
Hi, Art.
Welcome to the program.
You know, we've done a lot of shows over the years, and this is going to be one of the more difficult ones because Gene and I go way back, and I had talked to him just a couple days ago. Some of the things we're going to talk about tonight, you know, that we've never talked about before, were part of that conversation. Robin and I were planning to go to New Hampshire next week to meet with him and the people at his lab, the New Energy Foundation, and to discuss some very important political and technical developments relating to new energy, hyperdimensional physics, cold fusion, anti-gravity, if you want to even use that term. There are some extraordinary breakthroughs waiting in the wings. And when we got a call early afternoon today from a very close friend, so I knew that it was not in all a hoax, and he relayed that he had had a call from someone that he believed about this shocking and absolutely incomprehensible thing, I spent the rest of the day with Robin trying to track down if this was real, and unfortunately, as of about an hour ago, we talked with the police in Connecticut where the murder occurred, and although they're being very circumspect and there are rules about not acknowledging victims until the family has been able to come and view the body and make a positive ID, the local media in Connecticut, particularly my old station, Channel 3, which is WFSB now, used to be WTIC, they have confirmed that Jean was found at about 11 p.m. in southern Connecticut at his mother's home, we believe. He was robbed, apparently.
At his mother's home in Connecticut.
In southern Connecticut.
Yes.
He lived in New Hampshire in Concord.
Right.
But in Norwich, Connecticut, which is just a couple towns up from where I used to live in Norwalk. So I know the neighborhood very well. There has been some discussion on the net about, you know, a property dispute with a tenant and all that. I have no idea where that story came from. We have no confirmation of any of that. Apparently, he was found, his body was found in the yard of his of this family home.
Bludgeoned
to death. He was beaten to death.
God. How old was he, Richard? Do you know?
He was about my age and your age. We're all the same age. You know, the folks who are trying to make the world better are just about the same age. And you know, it's so shocking to have talked to somebody who is so vibrant and has so many exciting things going on. And tonight I'm hoping that this show can become a kind of a living memorial to Gene's work, because Gene was one of those people who basically, you know, they talk about people who will change the world. Well, Gene was changing the world. And I have this awful sinking feeling that that's the reason he's no longer with us tonight. That this rear guard action to prevent the future from coming, to prevent a new day from dawning. A few Neanderthals are running around out there doing despicable things in a desperate last-minute attempt to keep the inevitable from happening. And the reason I say that is because the coincidence of what we talked about and me talking to him at all, because we hadn't talked on the phone for 2 years.
What is it that brought you back together, Richard?
Well, as I said on George's show the other night, when we were in Washington at the X conference, we had some extremely interesting meetings on Capitol Hill with congressmen and staff. And in particular, we've got some people on the inside who are so enamored with what our message is and what we have to offer in the way of data and research and contacts through other data, that they have basically offered me a briefing on Capitol Hill, more than one, at my discretion. The room, actually, one room has already been reserved, and I was calling Gene to specifically invite him to discuss with me when we got together next week to be a part of this extraordinary opportunity, because Gene was at the center of the spider web of all of the credible scientists and technologists and engineers who have labored for so many years in the vineyards to bring forth this so-called free energy and new energy physics and technology, which this planet so desperately, desperately needs.
It certainly does. Richard, so he was a leader in cold fusion. Now, cold fusion in America was a very controversial thing. As you know, some institutions of higher learning were able to duplicate the experiments while others were not. It was kind of quietly dropped. Pons and Flashman moved to Europe, got fed up with the way it was being treated in this country. Where did Dr. Eugene Melov fit in this scheme of things?
Well, Gene started out, like we all started out, very squeaky clean mainstream. You know, my background was Cronkite, NASA. His background was MIT. He had two or three PhDs. I kind of lost track. He was a nuclear physicist. He was an environmental scientist. He knew the bad downside of nuclear physics and nuclear fission and the myth of, you know, hot fusion, which we've always been promised would happen, and it hasn't happened for 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the quote from Alice in Wonderland. You know, jam tomorrow, jam yesterday, but never jam today.
He was still an advocate of it.
Hot fusion. Not at all.
No.
What turned him into an activist in the new energy frontier was when he was science writer, head science writer at MIT, which is a very prestigious position. He found scientists on the payroll of the Department of Energy at MIT faking data against cold fusion experiments.
I've heard this.
It's not rumor. It's fact.
Actually altering.
Altering the data.
In other words,
it appear
to show
that their experiment, which received a positive result, actually perceived a negative result. And he was so incensed when his department would do nothing about this egregious violation of every science ethic, if not moral ethic, one can imagine.
He resigned over that?
He resigned over that, specifically. And then he went into a period where, you know, when you kind of blow the whistle on the in-crowd, you get blacklisted.
Yes.
And you can't get a job. And he tried to launch an independent laboratory and journal devoted to cold fusion. He had done his homework. He had written the book, Fire from Ice. If you read the book, you'll see there was a multitude of data, even back in 1989, showing that this was a real, if completely mysterious, phenomenon. But he spent a tremendous number of years, Art, basically paying the price of being a man of integrity. And that's one of the wonderful things that I loved about him, because he was unstoppable. He was determined to get at the truth, whatever the truth was, make it public, and bring this paradigm, this new age, where this planet no longer has to suffer from the want and privation of the oil economy and the control of limited resources, which we're seeing the bitter, bitter fruits of now in the Middle East and on our TV screens.
Yes.
Every single night.
Yes.
He was looking to a different day, a different path, a different dawning of the real human age. And on the eve of potentially some breakthroughs in that direction, he has been brutally murdered.
It was made to look like or appears to be robbery, initial motive, or at least he was robbed. That doesn't mean that's why he was killed.
We don't know really anything. We have got the names of the detectives, you know, from the police department. We're going to talk to them tomorrow. We're putting other people in touch with them that may have information. I just find the coincidence, given the breakthrough that he described to me on the phone, which I can talk about, and given what I was going to be able to bring him to in the way of conversations at the center of power, you know, in Washington with the people's representatives, you know, the White House may be, you know, out of bounds.
Richard, how much do you know about this, in quotes, breakthrough that he had told you about? Would it be so big that it might be a motive for murder?
There are several levels. There are the technical breakthroughs, which I can talk about. This was a political breakthrough. Because remember, Art, the problem has always been, once you solve the science, how do you get it before the American people?
Of course.
And investors and a
So process. You're saying he had achieved a breakthrough
in
that arena.
He had achieved a breakthrough. It was supposed to be moving forward in the next few weeks. It was one of the things we were going to discuss. I was actually, you know, quite skeptical, because I know how Washington can grind important things into dust just by, you know, dragging them out interminably, and then you just quit. People just, you know, they have to go on with their lives. He felt this was a political breakthrough. Well, let me tell you in a nutshell what he said it was. Many years ago, back in 1989, there was a very stinging, negative Department of Energy report, which basically put the nails in the coffin of cold fusion. When the New York Times writes about cold fusion, or Popular Science, or the Washington Post, or Science Magazine, they're basically quoting from the conclusions of this panel of eminent scientists, physicists.
In a nutshell, Richard, time's almost up here in the half hour.
Yep. But basically said there was nothing there. What Gene told me 2 days ago is the Department of Defense, the DOD, because of a sudden new perceived, get this, terrorist angle on coal fusion and new energy.
Terrorist angle. Yes.
We'll get to the details after the break, but he said that they were going to completely overturn the DOE 1989 negative report.
All right. Richard C. Hoagland, hold tight. When we come back, we'll be joined, incidentally, by David Wilcock. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
If you're just joining us, Richard C. Hoagland is here. We're about to be joined by David Wilcock. We're discussing the bludgeoning murder of Dr. Eugene Malov. Just announced tonight now, Dr. Malov has been a guest on this program any number of times. He was a leader, a proponent of cold fusion, and we're discussing his life, what he did, and what he may have been onto with Richard C. Hoagland. Shortly, David Wilcock. Stay right where you are. By the way, what I read at the beginning about Dr. Malov's death, it was written by Stephen B. Krivit, I believe that's, I hope that's correct, Stephen, of the New Energy Times. So it's a somber moment. There's no question about it. A really solemn moment. And Annabelle in Los Angeles writes, do you ever worry about your own safety? If all our brilliant scientists keep dying under mysterious circumstances, and you're one who brings us some of that information, I hope you're safe. Well, I don't know. I've wondered about that over the years, Richard, and I'm sure there have been a few times when you have too. When you deal in this kind of information, somebody's going to be unhappy with you, inevitably, and I suppose it's a risk of life, but I never gave it a whole lot of thought. How about you?
As you know, I've had some interesting experiences, you know, back in 99, the heart attack under very mysterious circumstances.
Yes.
George had Robin on the other night, and he wanted to go into that, so we did a bit. But no, this is certainly not something that you wake up every morning, you know, frozen in indecision. And Gene, if he had known that this was part of the landscape, I don't think he would have changed one thing he was doing. It's too important. Too many people's lives hang in the balance for the better. Let me make one small correction. I'm now going back to that conversation, trying to remember every nuance, as you do when it's your last conversation.
Of course.
And the reason the DOD is now involved is because there is a, quote, terrorist connection to cold fusion, which is a bizarre. But it's because it's linked through the DOE and their nuclear weapons mandate.
Department of Energy.
What you may not know is the Department of Energy.
Richard, can you give me any, and the audience, any idea of what possible application cold fusion could have in terrorism?
It's elementary simple. In fact, it was so obvious that I remember during the conversation several times saying in a very acerbic tone, well, of course, you know, they'll get interested now because they've got the fear factor.
Help me understand the fear factor. We need to bring David on here. So hit me with this first, though, if you would, please, and the audience.
All right, I have to do a 30-second backgrounder. One of the things, Art, you know we got to do it that way.
All right.
One of the things that was serendipitously discovered in the Pons and Fleischmann post-era, which Gene was heavily involved in terms of monitoring the efforts to replicate Pons and Fleischmann and the cold fusion in a bottle on a desk,
yes,
that kind of thing,
of course,
was the mysterious appearance of isotopes, nuclear materials, in the experiments that were not there in the beginning.
Right.
And they discovered that what was happening, and this went all the way from University of Texas to Los Alamos to France to Japan, that they were getting nuclear transmutation.
Got it.
The typical, you know,
the bubbles. The bubbles gave off what appeared to be a reaction.
It was a variety of experiments, but they all had this common thread that in addition to the energy, the heat that appeared, you got these bizarre transmutations of elements that shouldn't have occurred under any circumstances.
However, it's my understanding that it was rather subtle.
In the beginning it was subtle.
Right.
But here's where the breakthrough came. Apparently published in the open literature, meaning any scientist in the world can read it, or anybody working for Bin Laden, in the major physical journal, Japanese Physics Journal, a group of scientists at Mitsubishi, which is one of the heavy hitter corporations in Japan.
Absolutely.
Conducted some extraordinarily simple experiments, and I won't bore people with what they are. Gene described them to me, and they're incredibly simple.
Well, you can bore me with that if you want.
Okay, all right. Tell me where you want to go.
I want to understand the process that...
You basically have a container, a closed container, like a vacuum tube. All right, it can be big or small. You have a membrane down the middle, which separates one side with a deuterium gas, which is heavy hydrogen, from the other side, which is basically a good vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And on the membrane, which can be palladium, which is one of the cold fusion active elements.
Or a nickel.
What he described was palladium.
That's right.
You plate some other material, some other metal. And depending upon what metal you chose, when you basically observed what was coming through the membrane into the vacuum side, it had changed elemental composition and was a heavier isotope. And he led me through the parent-daughter product series, and he said, guess what you need to put on the membrane to get U-235 in the empty chamber?
What?
Well, he didn't, but I mean, you can just do the nucleon calculation yourself.
So
it's a common metal. It's vacuum deposition. Any high school physics lab can make this up.
Is the suggestion through all of this, Richard, that this element could then be used in some catastrophic bomb?
If you had a Bin Laden type, all right, who wanted to make a lot of U-235 to make a fission bomb,
yes,
like the old Oak Ridge.
You're saying you could manufacture
in a garage, in a basement, in a chem lab, anywhere on Earth with trivial expenditure of resources, money, equipment, That's why the DOD and the DOE are suddenly interested in cold fusion.
All right.
Because it can kill people.
All right, I've got it. Anything that could kill people, certainly. All right, time to bring David, he's been patient, in on the conversation. We'll continue. David Wilcock is a professional intuitive consultant who, since reading Richard C. Hoagland's Monuments of Mars in 1993, has intensively jumped into the middle of ufology, ancient civilizations, consciousness, science, new paradigms of matter and energy. He's the author of a trilogy of scientific research works known as the Convergence Series, which gives definitive support to the idea that a change in matter, energy, and consciousness is actually now occurring on the Earth and throughout the solar system. So I want to bring him into the conversation, and if luck is with us, here he is. David?
Hello, Art. How you doing?
Hi. I take it you've been following closely the conversation to this point. I apologize for keeping you on the line this long without bringing you on, but this was breaking news that really did have to be covered. I hope you understand.
Absolutely. It's not a problem.
All right, you're going to have to get good and close.
Yeah, I can barely hear David.
Yeah, good and close
okay.
to that phone and yell at us. You know, if your lips are touching it, then you're in the right place, David.
Okay, how do I sound now?
Much better. All right. David, I'd like to give you the opportunity to comment on what you've heard so far and or add or subtract anything you would like to.
Well, in the course of my work, I've been affiliated with people who are involved in the free energy field. Quite directly in some cases. I was invited to speak at the 2002 U.S. Psychotronics Association conference. And I'm actually going to be speaking at the one that's going on this year as well. That's the website for that is psychotronics.org.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen evidence of people having threats or being assassinated. One example would be I spoke with Dale Pond. He had made a breakthrough and then came home and found a burnt match in the middle of the carpet of his living room. Another example, which is even more bizarre, occurred with somebody who I actually spoke on the same stage with, and I guess I won't say his name right now, but this particular guy had made a breakthrough in free energy, and the first time it happened, the very next morning when he came back to his lab, everything related to the experiment was missing, including all the paperwork, all the prototypes, etc. Then later on, he made another breakthrough. This time it was in his own private apartment. And he goes out for his son's baseball game, which takes about 4 hours of time. And he comes back to his apartment, and there's no carpets, there's no shower curtain, there's no shower curtain rod, there's no furniture, there's nothing in the cabinets. The entire apartment was literally gutted head to toe. And that sounds pretty outrageous. I don't know how really somebody could move that quickly in 4 hours, but I suppose it's possible. And I believe he was telling me the truth. So,
well,
when I'm hearing about...
As most of my audience knows, David, there have been a bevy, I guess you'd say, of research biologists, people working on all kinds of little bugs, other scientists working on, you know, leading-edge, cutting-edge science in a number of fields that have met very mysterious deaths in the last few years. I mean, this is just one more.
Yeah, you know, the literature on this is pretty solid. I guess as far as the personal angle, which is a question that Richard had also answered recently, I'm reminded of a quote from Abraham Lincoln where he says, "I'd rather die once at the hand of an assassin than die every day in fear of assassination."
That's right, and that's really the answer to the danger question. You just can't live your life that way. Some lines of work are more dangerous than others for obvious reasons. But
well, what was so ironic is that in our conversation we were talking about the dam appears to be about to break. It's been 15 years. Coming up on 15 years since Pons and Fleischmann and the stunning negative DOE report, which basically killed all official scientific interests, you know, by the journals, by Nature, by Science, by the DOE itself as a source of funding, by most scientists who basically have to chase after grants to stay alive and to keep, you know, publishing. But Gene, you know, held the torch very high, and he was able to marshal some very prestigious people on the board of the magazine and on the board of the foundation, And I'm confident tonight that this will go on, that this is a desperate, stupid, insane act of something.
Yes.
But I can't believe it's just coincidence.
Do either one of the two of you care to comment on the dire, dire situation the world is in and how really important an alternative energy source is right now, how really important and how critical it is?
I would say it's of ultimate importance. If we don't change the way things are going, we're not going to have a planet.
No. You know,
what could be more important than that?
One of the government officials in Britain said it's a bigger problem for the world than terrorism.
Oh, by far.
So that's how big a deal it is that we're talking about here. I mean, everything, literally, your lifestyle, your life, the life of those people in the world, all of it rests on the ability of this world to figure out a way to stop doing some of what we're doing right now and find a new way to do it, or else.
Hypothetically, let's say that part of the reason, or maybe the main reason, for the extinguishing of these free energy scientists, of which I'm aware of more examples than I've given, has to do with money. Well, the bottom line is that how can you make money when there's nobody there? How can you make money when the world itself has been irreversibly damaged by the continuing abuse of these fossil fuels? If there's any truth to the idea of peak oil, then we don't really have much more, and that's why gas is $2 a gallon right now.
Actually, it hit $3 a gallon in Santa Barbara, $3.09 or something horrible like
totally
that in Santa Barbara. I knew we'd hit $3 gas.
And for full service, it went over $4.07 last night.
Yeah, I heard that. I forget where that was. California?
It was somewhere? Los Angeles.
L.A.? Yep. Over $4. Well, it's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse, and it's going to get a lot worse. And people, I don't think all of them grasp the real place this is going to go. I mean, this country runs on oil. All the things you buy, all of them, just about, are transported by vehicles that burn fossil fuels to get them from here to there.
That's correct.
Our whole economy is based on this. I understand what's at stake, or at least I think I understand part of it. This is the most serious issue in the world. And we have people, of course, we have no reason to say tonight that Dr. Malov was murdered because of his research, but you also can't dismiss that as one very strong possibility.
Art, I just look at this coincidence, and I cannot believe it's coincidence. It just boggles the mind, because when we were going to get together, we were going to share some critical information on both sides, and then I was going to take him to Washington to meet with people that we met with and many, many others, in a setting where his three PhDs and all the people that he talks to and the technology he could bring with him. Remember how, Art, you've always wanted a gadget to stick on your desk and just run?
Yeah, that's what I've always said. Just give me even a toy, something.
Well, Gene has that. He had that. And I wanted that for my Washington presentations. And I'm still going to get that, because it wasn't just that he had it. He had access to it through other people who have done the actual research. So this is a incredibly stupid and blast. All this has done is to alert everyone what the stakes really are tonight. I mean, just watch your TV screen and imagine a world where all we have to look forward to is more terrorism, higher prices, more American kids dying in places where we don't want them dying.
Deterioration of the environment.
Secure.
Yeah, the environment.
The environment going to hell in a handbasket. The oceans, the atmosphere, you know, larger cases of greenhouse warming as we pour, you know, the last gas of fossil fuel into the air,
yeah,
in an effort to keep us at some, you know, standard of living. That is the resource downward spiral I discussed the other night with George. And the reason that I wanted this audience to reach out and get me to a position to testify in front of the President's Space Commission. Well, one of the things that's happening as part of our East Coast trip in the next few weeks, I have set up a personal meeting and discussion with a key individual on the President's Space Commission. And what struck me in our conversation, this was before I actually talked to Gene, And the reason I called Gene is because I thought, okay, let's do this as a 1-2 punch. Let's bring these conversations into the same arena. When I talked with the commissioner, what struck me was how he was more apocalyptic than I had been on the air the other night when I talked about the resource box and how the president's space vision is our last best hope, provided we reach out and do it the smart way, the intelligent way, which involves some of the technologies and physics that Maloff had access to. And when this commissioner was talking to me, he says, Dick, I think this is our last chance. If we don't do it this time, we will never do it because the resources won't be there, the political will not be there, we will be swallowed up by this monster of everybody stuck in the same room, firing in the dark at each other over a few scraps of food. I mean, my basic metaphor that I used on the air the other night. And that's what was going to bring us together in that meeting. And it was based on that meeting that I called up Gene and I said, let us think of a way to bring what you know is possible now to Washington to show people who are honest but ignorant that there is a way out of this trap. There's a way out of this box while we have time. And tonight, he's not with us anymore.
And you were going to, or you're going to, actually have a demonstration available for him. You're going to have a real over-unity device.
Now that I don't have Gene to act as a go-between, it will be more difficult to get to the principles, but I'm going to make one hell of a try, and I'm going to try to do that. I don't know the time frame yet.
But you're saying you have this device.
I know that Gene personally saw it, witnessed it, wrote about it, gave testimonials.
David, we're approaching the top of the hour. If all of that is true, then that would potentially be a motive for murder. If you really had that, that would certainly be a motive for murder. And that's not to say that's why he was just murdered, bludgeoned to death. But if you really had what we just talked about, that would be a motive. No question about it. From the high desert, in the middle of the night, on the weekend, this is Coast to Coast AM, rocking along.